previously on Popping Collars.
So what I hear you saying is that Christian Bale Batman makes sense. Perhaps even Adam West Batman makes sense. Probably Michael Keaton Batman makes sense, but definitely not George Clooney and Val Kidd. Are you kidding?
Yes, less nipples on the that. Yep.
That's right. Welcome to Popping Collars, the podcast that lives at the intersection between religion and pop culture, the show where priests, pastors, ministers, and religious thinkers from around the country weigh in on what people are binge-watching, tweeting about, trolling on message boards, and celebrating on blogs. My name is Greg Knight. I am in Palm Beach, Florida, and I am your host of this roundtable conversation with our guests who this week include the returning Betsy Gonzalez from Alexandria, Virginia. Hey, Betsy.
Hey, Greg.
The returning Liz Easton from Omaha, Nebraska. Hello, Liz.
Hey, everybody.
And finally, another first-time special guest on the program, John White from Beckley, West Virginia. Hello, John.
Thank you for letting me be here.
This is episode 23 of Popping Collars, and our topic today is new media / new journalism. So the way I try to describe this, Dan Patrick, the sports talk radio host, has a great saying on his show that fast and wrong is still fast. And that's what news kind of seems to be to me these days. Whether it's using Twitter as your daily news feed or scrolling through BuzzFeed top 10 lists or even scanning HuffPost or Drudge Report entries to reinforce your opinion of the world, media, especially online media, feels very immediate these days. And I'm curious, as a former journalism major like yourself, Betsy, and someone who runs an Episcopal News website, Episcopal Cafe, plug for you, John.
Score.
How do you guys experience how news is produced these days? And do you have a particular site that highlights the new world of information gathering for you?
Well, I hopped out of journalism. I worked in journalism for a decade before going to seminary. So after spending time in New Orleans, spending time at the Washington Post, I mean, I didn't know 07 was going to be a precipitous time to leave the print journalism world, but it ended up being that way. And so it was just this time of great transition. When I came back from seminary, everybody there looked like they needed a newsroom chaplain, and I wish I could have been there to help them. I mean, hard times and just changes, just having to be fluid. I think for me, you know, it was hard to move away from the ink to the online, but that's really been my shift, is that it's either the Washington Post or the New York Times, typically online, and I haven't had the lifestyle to really have the physical thing with me. So that's me. But John, you're more in it day to day than my little self.
Well, interestingly, I think that since I've taken on being the editor of the cafe, my ability to consume news has been limited because we're spending a lot of time trying to create, I guess, the stories. And we're primarily a news aggregator, so my media consumption is much more limited and focused on churchy things than it used to be. And so, I, like lots of people, I suppose, I rely on NPR and Slate magazine and Facebook to kind of find out. And I'm old, so I actually still read a daily newspaper. So I actually do still get news from that. Mind you, our local newspaper isn't exactly the Washington Post, but you know, it has stuff. So
got what you need. It's got what you need.
It's got what you need. It doesn't have movie listings anymore, but I don't think newspapers have had those in like 20 years. So.
That's an interesting point about aggregating church news, though, because what I found was, so this podcast came together a year ago. We're celebrating our 1 year anniversary, like right around now. And what I've learned over the course of the last few episodes, it felt like we were doing something kind of novel and unique. And then I found out that there's like 20 Episcopal podcasts.
Yeah, there's like a whole Anglican podcast group.
There's like this whole world that I had no idea existed. And I guess that's the way that I kind of experience church news, especially Episcopal church news. It's always coming as a surprise to me that something's been around for 5 years. And I don't know if that's because I'm just not informed, or if that's because the news itself is so specialized that you have to kind of look for it in order to find it.
I think that's true. I mean, I think of myself, I've not been a lifelong Episcopalian. I came into the church only in this century, as a matter of fact. But, you know, as I went away to seminary and I kind of got into more, I guess, a desire for more news, you know, you kind of just start typing on the Google Episcopal Church news or whatever, and you find something, and then there'll be a link to something and to something else. And so, you know, I think there's sort of a core, you know, there's Anglicans Online, there's the Episcopal Cafe, there's Church Times, which is mostly the Church of England. And then, you know, there's a whole suite of, we're all sort of progressive, I guess, sites. And then there's a whole suite of more conservative sites, Virtue Online, Stand Firm, The Living Church, which has done a really good job of hiding itself in social media, but is starting to emerge a little bit. And so, I think that there is sort of a core, but, you know, and if you start to go into blogs, I mean, straight up blogs, people just giving reflective essays or whatnot, boy, the sky's the limit there. I mean, every parish priest probably. Churches are trying to figure out ways to get their stories out, but you have to wonder at some point if there's so many stories that you can't even begin to make sense of it. And I mean, that's what we try to do, is to go to these 1,000 sources and bring stuff together to present what we feel are the sort of the key stories for the church, and not necessarily for the Episcopal Church, but just sort of religiously minded and progressively liberal church minded people as well. I mean, we're pretty open and upfront about our biases. We don't pretend to be an objective source of news. We're not, sort of mid-20th century journalism. We have a point of view.
And yet the comment section just ignores that fact.
Well, yeah. And we get letters from people, not real letters, but emails, you know, like, you need to write a story on this cause. And a dozen times a month, I'm like, we are not advocates. You know, we have a bias, but we're not promoting go out and do this, right? We're not taking sides in conflicts. But lots of people do see us as that's our role, even though I don't think the website has ever done that in the 8 years it's been in existence.
It's funny because this kind of harkens back to the conversation that Liz and Craig and I were having in the Mad Men episode. I think that people still sometimes see institutions as following those old rules. And like that, like it hasn't changed yet. Like the journalism hasn't changed. Like there still must be an office somewhere where you guys get together and like somebody's like, I've got a great story, and you're like, no, we're gonna scrap it and we're gonna run with this one. You know, it's like All the President's Men, Episcopal Cafe edition. You know, that kind of thing. I think that it's just because we have these images in our minds and they become our reality, and so we can't fathom that it works differently somehow.
But I do think good journalism is living in the uncomfortable and living in the gray parts in the middle. If we are a church that has had a hard time when we don't all agree on something, we have a really hard time telling that story. And how can we talk about disagreement in a way that's healthy as opposed to just kind of shellacking over it and not talking about it?
Let's roll with that talking about it piece, because I think you hit on something, Liz, which is the comments section.
Don't read the comments for any website.
Man, that's where your blood starts to boil, right? Because that's where you start to realize that like all those letters to the editor, they were edited. Mm-hmm. Because comment sections are a free for all. And I mean, it is a like you just jump in and just start throwing elbows. Especially so you guys were all at General Convention. We mentioned it a couple of times. The Episcopal General Convention just recently wrapped up in Salt Lake City, Utah, as we're recording this. And one of the things that came out of convention was kind of a large social media community that kind of formed around a common hashtag where people were conversing back and forth. But is conversation really what's happening? There's a lot of talking, but it seems like it seems a lot like kind of what the comment section can be sometimes, which is, I'm going to get my point across, but I'm going to get my point across in a very clever way, and in a way that somehow undercuts your point. You know, like whatever your point was.
I had a really conflicted relationship with the House of Twitter. I enjoy Twitter, although I don't use it that much. I'd like to use it more, but I used it more during general convention than I ever have. And I was a first-time deputy, which a lot of us were. So there was a lot of kind of keeping up that had to be done. I really needed to be present on the floor of the House of Deputies. And by present, I mean like fully engaged in what was going on, I think, to really be responsible with my role there, especially as a newcomer. But once I got into the Twitter thing, then that was a distraction. And sometimes in a good way, because it kept me tracking the legislation, and in other ways that weren't so good, because I knew what people's private snarky thoughts were. Like, I'm naturally not that snarky of a person, so it wouldn't have occurred to me to think some of the things that people were tweeting. So it kind of got me off track sometimes. It actually influenced my thought process on some legislation. For good or for bad.
I registered for Twitter the very first time at General Convention in 2012. So I'd never had an account and suddenly wanted to follow this other conversation that was going on, because I believe they live streamed in 2012 as well. So when we talk about the House of Twitter, there's the House of Bishops, and they're over there. People are tweeting about them too. But then there's the House of Deputies. But then there's all these people who are live streaming both houses at their house, poolside, whatever, across the world, and they're watching and commenting. So I like that it actually widened the circle of the conversation. I found that to be interesting. You got to really see where social media heat was, you know, anything in the Acts 8 zone, anything about evangelism and social media, you know, everybody heats up on Twitter. But you got to really see where people were feeling passionate who were not physically in the room. And I found that to be helpful. And just for my own learning style, I need distraction. I am not a cliche kind of knitter type. I don't have something. So to really have, I had my virtual binder screen, so my iPad, and then I had my phone with my tweeting stream on it. And then I had my own iPad for any notes I wanted to take. So it was just kind of this three screen experience, but it helped me follow along. I agree with Liz. It helped me sometimes see some things in the legislation that I didn't see before, or to be able to just get a different nuance into something. But it kept me, especially in those long afternoon sessions, it was really helpful in many ways for me.
I appreciated that it widened the circle also. But there's a part of the thing about being a deputy is that you have a responsibility to be present, if you're interested, at committee meetings and see legislation as it's being crafted and speak up for it if you can. And obviously you can't be everywhere, so your little deputation kind of divides some of that responsibility. So it frustrated me that people would pipe up on Twitter about things that they really didn't have a whole lot of knowledge about other than the legislation that was right before them.
We really saw an example of some craziness going on was the election of the presiding bishop. So Michael Curry's election, which was announced on Twitter where I saw it first, and then realized that there was this whole kind of procedure that needed to happen beforehand. And so that's where you got the sense that maybe we're not as hip to how this media is actually working as we thought we were. Because all of a sudden, rumor, conjecture is becoming news.
And leaks.
Right?
No, well, rumor, conjecture, and actual leaks. It mm-hmm. wasn't just conjecture.
That was the Twitterverse was not happy.
No.
With that. You know, because it made me think of your Dan Patrick quote, the faster. Like, when you said that, I immediately went to this. I'm like, ooh, faster was not better here, friends, because everybody right. was super pissed off.
To me, that was in part a metaphor about social media. And I know that really what we need to do is fix our processes so that something like that won't happen in the future. But the metaphor for me was that whole election felt very sacred. And the way that the bishops were sequestered, the way that we worshiped together and prayed for each other. I mean, my deputation laid hands on my bishop and prayed for him before he left for the cathedral. Like, it was a very sacred and holy thing. And there was some magic involved, right? There was no white smoke or whatever, but there was some magic involved. And the social media leaking stole the magic, right? And I guess that's just part of life now. But to me, it felt a little bit like a metaphor. If we are not engaged in being fully present in the place where we are, what are we losing? What's being taken away from us? Certainly, we're gaining things. You can see gains all the time. I wouldn't get rid of social media, you know, at all. But we're losing some of the magic, I think.
I was there as a media presence and not as a deputy, right? So it's not on me to be present and vote or whatever. I'm just sort of covering what's happening. And I was highly engaged in Twitter on the hashtag GC78. And I was trying to aim my tweets primarily for an audience who wasn't present. And I tried to not be too snarky, but I think it's really interesting, that idea, because we're sort of lauding the ability of people who aren't present to partake in General Convention and kind of bring the church closer together. At the same time, there's something about those who are actually present needing to stay present to the moment. And I think for me, the biggest conflict came during the final Eucharist, when Bishop Curry was the preacher. And I tweeted some things during his sermon, and on one level, he was saying some stuff that I think people just really needed to hear, and I wanted to share. At the same time, I was wondering, you know, how present am I to hearing this message, if I'm also picking out the best quotes and sending them out to the world. And so, you know, I was conflicted in that as a worshiper. And I think that you're speaking of that, being present to the holy is something we, in the church, haven't quite worked out in terms of how we use social media. And I know there are churches who encourage social media use, like during regular worship. I don't think that happens at my church, but I'm not going to tell people to stop. But I also wonder to what extent we can be present to the holy if we're also trying to share the most clever thoughts and things we hear with the whole world.
Well, and it's the cleverness, I think, that is where some of the danger comes in, or at least for me, that the quippy, clever, snarky stuff, it, for me, for my ego, that's where sin happens for me. I'm sure that's not true for everyone. I'm sure other people are being prophets.
We all want those retweets.
Right.
Well, and we've talked on the show, too, about, you know, sometimes it's not even just about being clever or being snarky. Sometimes it's just there's this kind of competition that exists in religious language sometimes, where you just want to have the last word, or you just want to have the pastoral moment that's going to resonate, you know, the most, or something like that. There's some kind of ego piece involved sometimes. And, you know, I'm not saying that priests have egos.
No way, Greg. No way.
Who would say that? I'm not. Certainly
totally
not.
Totally selfless. I don't know what you're talking about.
Unselfie.
But there is, I mean, I feel that sometimes, like in that Twitter world of, well, I'm kind of a priestly priest and here's my thoughts, you know, and it's like, okay, all right, settle down, slow your roll, man. Just calm down and put out 140 characters of information. Like, that's all I need. So, but I think you hit on something, John. I'm the one person represented in this conversation that was not at General Convention. And I can tell you absolutely that following on Twitter, while I did appreciate the information and stuff, I did feel detached from what was going on there. I had no sense of what the atmosphere was in the room or something like that. This is a piece that I think is going to be important as we start to, say, use evangelism language and stuff like that moving forward, is that, you know, if we're using these tools as a way of engaging people, we may be missing some connections along the way. No?
Well, it's the difference between, you know, how do we invite them into a genuine experience and how do we invite them into a show? And I'm thinking, when I was a kid, you know, we visited one of those Native American pueblos, and they did the dancing, which I assume was originally based on some sort of very, you know, holy, sacramental, you know, ritual that, you know, their forebears would have been partaking in. And I don't know to what extent that was true for the actual dancers I saw, but it was just an interesting thing to watch, but it wasn't, I don't know how meaningful for it was for either the spectators or the participants. And I think one of the dangers for us is in this new world, this brave new world, is is that if we do, if we are really good at sort of communicating on social media and sort of being clever and quippy, are we going to totally make church devoid of the holy experience altogether in the name of getting more people to participate in it? And I don't know where the answer is there, but it's one of those questions that it kind of goes rumbling around in my brain.
But there were also some, you know, we talk a lot about the clever quippy. There were some wonderfully sincere, emotion-filled, impactful ways on social media that people were sharing the story of what we were doing at convention or in any way. You know, I mean that, yeah, sometimes the other voices can feel the loudest in the room. But, you know, there were just other ways that I found, I still found it to be something that was pulling a universe of people together, specifically in this case, which I think Twitter does so well with anything that's an ongoing event, a live event. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where Twitter really shines. Yeah, that's when my Twitter lights up. It's General Convention and the Oscars, friends. So, you know, that's, you know, Golden Globes. But, you know, these are my things, right? So it's like the liveness and the thing that pulls people together. I mean, I'm always a more people, the better unifier type voice. But that I can deal with folks kind of going off the rails in some areas, but it does become a great place where people can share some of the themes and stories going on as well.
I don't know how evangelistic the General Convention hashtag was. And I got called out on Twitter because during the online evangelism debate, I said something along those lines, that if we're supposed to be being evangelistic and on Twitter right now, people are going to find a snarky and sometimes mean church. And people did not like that, and they tweeted back at me, like, snark is sometimes sacred or something.
Else. Get off my lawn!
Exactly, yeah. It was like that. So that is my concern, is that it was a lot of in-speak, and, you know, hashtag A101 passes, you know, whatever. Like, that's not telling the good news of Jesus to people, but it was advancing the conversation. You know, it was a both and. We can't just say that everything is evangelistic.
No. But this also brings us back, I think, to where we started, which is, where is journalism in this, right? I mean, so we have this live stream of people commenting and reflecting on their experiences and perhaps occasionally being clever about it. But that's very immediate in its impact. And so, you know, I think the big question for journalism, which is where we started this conversation, is how do we now collate that stream into a coherent narrative? Or have we just abandoned coherent narrative altogether?
Yeah, the buzz feeding of the news, right? This idea of, well, let me get my information out there, and maybe I can get it out there in an entertaining way, but it's definitely got to be short and to the point and free of nuance. Because while there are people like you, Betsy, that will consume a Washington Post article or a New York, dare I say, a New York Times article, there are a lot of people that are like, no, just give me top 10. What's your top 10? Just give me that. Give me that. And even then, I'm just going to read the headlines. Like, I'm just going to read the thing. I'm not going to read the paragraph under it, right? And I just feel like there's a lot of that, right? And what I hear you saying, John, is that good journalism is where facts meet a compelling story. And we're getting some of a story and some of the facts and creating junk food out of what should probably be a full course meal.
Right. So it's like backwards from what we were talking about, where you take this stream and create a narrative out of it. They have sort of a narrative, and then they're going to go find the pieces that will fit that, I think. And certainly in the way they cover church news is what I see.
It upsets me every year that there are particular journalists who come in and want to write the narrative that they want to write, and they write it under commentary. And it runs in my alma mater paper, and I try not to get ticked off about it. But I email a colleague or two, just kind of like, why are we allowing this kind of self-fulfilling, you know, only focusing on certain aspects and not being able to hold the whole? And that gets a little frustrating. I think it makes my journalistic spidey sense go crazy, and I get all upset about it. But, you know. What I've been looking for, I've been reaching out, but my
Our Go In Pieces segment. This is an opportunity for us to talk about our blogs, our Twitter feeds, our websites, however it is that people can get in touch with us and however it is that we can get in touch with people. So, Liz, where are you? What are you doing? How can people get in touch with you?
Thanks, Greg. I'm the canon to the ordinary for the Diocese of Nebraska. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram, both at Liz East, or you can find the Diocese of Nebraska on Instagram.
I'm so happy we have you on, Liz.
And Greg's favorite Instagram handle, which is, wait, at Diocese _of_Nebraska. We need a social media person, because I was the idiot who came up with that. But, yeah, that's nice.
All right. And Wandering Clarkson.
Hashtag Wandering Clarkson. He's all over the place.
I love that little dude.
Me too.
I was following him at your camp.
Yeah, he was just at camp. He came to General Convention. He spent a lot of time in the House of Bishops, his rightful place. And he's doing great. He's doing great.
He had no voice or vote.
No, neither voice nor vote.
He's retired, though, so he couldn't vote in the presiding bishop.
Well, no, retired bishops can vote, so that was... an oversight. I showed him when I was at camp, I showed him to a 3-year-old, probably a 5-year-old. And the little boy looks at him and goes, "Why is he so sad?" He's not sad. It's his period appropriate facial hair.
Well, and they didn't smile in pictures then because the camera, it was very expensive and you don't just smile.
You're sitting there for a while.
Had to sit for 5 hours.
Yeah, you want to hold a smile for an hour while they Matthew Brady takes your picture. No.
Terrible.
Betsy, where are you? What are you doing? How can people get in touch with you?
I am normally in Alexandria, Virginia, and serve as a chaplain at the Episcopal High School, Go High School. And you can find me on Facebook. You can find me through Episcopal's website. You can also find me on Twitter at Betsy_Gons.
John, where are you? What are you doing? How can people get in touch with you?
Well, I'm the rector at St. Stephen's Episcopal Church here in lovely Beckley, West Virginia, in the southern part of our state. And mostly you can find me at Episcopal Cafe, EpiscopalCafe.com. We also have a Facebook site and Twitter feed, all called the same thing, Episcopal Cafe. And my email at John, J-O-N, .White@EpiscopalCafe.com. You can follow me on Twitter, but I just use it to read other people's stuff, so it would be really, really boring.
Bringing people to me. Yeah, that's how it
is. I use it as a news source to create articles for the cafe, primarily.
My name is Greg Knight. I am at Bethesda by the Sea Episcopal Church in Palm Beach, Florida, where I am the Director of Children and Youth Ministries. You can find us on the web at bbts.org. You can find me on Twitter at @ThatGregKnight. You can find Popping Collars on Twitter at Popping Collars. You can also find us on the Facebook where you can like or friend us. You can find us on Instagram by searching Popping Collars Podcast. And, of course, you can always find our shows at poppingcollarspodcast.com. You can email us, should you choose to do so, at poppingcollarspodcast@gmail.com. Finally, you can find our show at any of the usual suspect sites where you get your podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud. Just make sure that if you do find us on iTunes, throw us a review, throw us a rating. Maybe we'll show up as the top 2,000 religion and spirituality podcast. Who knows?
Where else can you find us, Greg?
And you can find us on EpiscopalCafe.com, where our show is featured each and every time we drop. We love Episcopal Cafe. We recommend them to you for all your Episcopal news and beyond.
And let me just say, I appreciate that suck up at the end of every episode very, very much.
And anyway, that's Popping Collars for this time. Thank you, Liz. Thank you, Betsy. Thank you, John, for being with us. We'll see you next time.
Keep those collars pop. Woo!